Today, I will be reading Special Counsel Jack Smith's brief for the United States in Donald Trump v. United States, the Supreme Court case in which Donald Trump asserts that presidents have absolute criminal immunity. If you are interested in listening to the oral arguments in this case, they are scheduled to take place later this month on April 25th at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, and you can listen to the oral arguments as they happen on the Supreme Court website at supremecourt.gov. Enjoy. Donald J. Trump, Petitioner, v. United States of America. Brief for the United States. Opinions below. The opinion of the Court of Appeals is reported at 91 F. 4th, 1173. The opinion of the District Court is not yet reported but is available at 2023 W.L. 8359833. Jurisdiction. The judgment of the Court of Appeals was entered on February 6, 2024. On February 28, 2024, this court treated petitioner's application for a stay as a petition for a writ of certiorari and granted the petition. The jurisdiction of this court rests on 28 U.S.C. 1254-1. Constitutional and statutory provisions involved. Relevant constitutional and statutory provisions are reproduced in the appendix to this brief. Statement. 1. From January 2017 until January 2021, petitioner was President of the United States. According to a federal grand jury indictment, petitioner, while serving as president, conspired with several private individuals and a public official to overturn the legitimate results of the 2020 presidential election by using knowingly false claims of election fraud to obstruct the federal government function by which those results are collected, counted, and certified. The indictment alleges that petitioner sought to accomplish the conspiracy's objectives through five means: using deceit toward state officials to subvert the legitimate election results in those states, using deceit to organize fraudulent slates of electors in seven targeted states and cause them to send false certificates to Congress, leveraging the Department of Justice, DOJ, to use deceit to have state officials replace the legitimate electoral slate with electors who would cast their votes for petitioner, attempting to enlist the vice president in his capacity as president of the Senate to fraudulently alter the election results during the certification proceeding on January 6, 2021, and directing supporters to the United States Capitol to obstruct the proceeding, and exploiting the violence and chaos that transpired at the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Based on those allegations, Count 1 charges petitioner with conspiring to defraud the United States in violation of 18 U.S.C. 371. Counts 2 and 3 charge petitioner with conspiracy and substantive violations of 18 U.S.C. 1512C2 for corruptly obstructing the certification of the presidential election results on January 6, 2021. Count 4 charges petitioner with conspiring to violate one or more person's constitutional right to vote and have one's vote counted, in violation of 18 U.S.C. 241. 2. Petitioner moved to dismiss the indictment on the grounds, inter alia, that he enjoys absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for acts taken within the outer perimeter of his official responsibilities, and that the indictment's allegations all fall within that scope. The district court denied petitioner's presidential immunity claim and a related double jeopardy claim. The court explained that the Constitution's text, structure, and history support the conclusion that petitioner may be subject to federal investigation, indictment, prosecution, conviction, and punishment for any criminal acts undertaken while in office. The Court of Appeals affirmed. The court explained that any executive immunity that may have protected petitioner while he served as president no longer protects him against this prosecution. The court observed that petitioner's alleged efforts to remain in power despite losing the 2020 election were, if proven, an unprecedented assault on the structure of our government, and it rejected petitioner's claim that a president has unbounded authority to commit crimes that would neutralize the most fundamental check on executive power, the recognition and implementation of election results. To the contrary, the court stated, beyond the general reasons for rejecting petitioner's categorical immunity claim, the charges here implicate the Article II interests investing authority in a new president and the citizenry's interest in democratically selecting its president. After analyzing constitutional text, structure, and history, the Court of Appeals concluded that the considerations identified by this court in assessing presidential immunity claims compel the rejection of his claim of immunity in this case. Summary of argument. 1. A former president lacks absolute immunity from federal criminal prosecution for conduct involving his official acts. A. Petitioner asserts a novel and sweeping immunity from the federal criminal laws that govern all citizens' conduct. Under this court's established separation of powers framework, a claim of presidential exemption from a statutory limitation requires the president to identify an Article II basis that precludes the application of that congressional act. No presidential power at issue in this case entitles the president to claim immunity from the general federal criminal prohibitions supporting the charges. Fraud against the United States, obstruction of official proceedings, and denial of the right to vote. The president's constitutional duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed does not entail a general right to violate them. B. History likewise refutes petitioner's claim. The framers never endorsed criminal immunity for a former president, and all presidents from the founding to the modern era have known that after leaving office, they faced potential criminal liability for official acts. The closest historical analog is President Nixon's official conduct in Watergate, and his acceptance of a pardon implied his and President Ford's recognition that a former president was subject to prosecution. Since Watergate, the Department of Justice has held the view that a former president may face criminal prosecution, and independent and special counsels have operated from that same understanding. Until petitioner's arguments in this case, so had former presidents. C. The court's holding in Nixon v. Fitzgerald, 1982, that a president enjoys immunity from private civil damages actions does not extend to federal criminal prosecutions. This case involves the far weightier interest in vindicating federal criminal law in a prosecution brought by the executive branch itself. That was not true in Fitzgerald. On the other side of the ledger, while the Fitzgerald court was concerned about the potential that a multiplicity of private civil actions would chill a president's decisions, the same concerns are not present in the criminal context. A criminal prosecution must be brought by the executive with strong institutional checks to ensure even-handed and impartial enforcement of the law. a grand jury must find that an indictment is justified. The government must make its case and meet its burden of proof in a public trial. And the courts enforce due process protections to guard against politically motivated prosecutions. Collectively, these layered safeguards provide assurance that prosecutions will be screened under vigorous standards and that no president need be chilled in fulfilling his responsibilities by the understanding that he is subject to prosecution if he commits federal crimes. D. Federal criminal law applies to the president. Petitioner suggests that unless a criminal statute expressly names the president, the statute does not apply. That radical suggestion, which would free the president from virtually all criminal law, even crimes such as bribery, murder, treason, and sedition, is unfounded. That rule finds no support in this court's decisions, nor is it supported by opinions of the Department of Justice, which have instead construed statutes to apply to the president unless doing so creates a serious risk of infringing the president's constitutional powers. That more modest interpretive principle has no application to the crimes charged here, which pose no risk of unconstitutionally regulating the president's conduct. Ample other safeguards protect legitimate presidential interests. For instance, the established public authority exception of certain official conduct from the criminal law, narrowing constructions of statutes to avoid serious constitutional questions, and, as a backstop, as applied constitutional challenges. E. The Impeachment Judgment Clause, U.S. Constitution Article 1, Section 3, Clause 7, does not establish a rule requiring a president's impeachment and conviction before a former president may be prosecuted. The text of the clause clarifies that an impeached and convicted president may nevertheless be prosecuted and thus expressly recognizes that former presidents are subject to federal criminal prosecution. Petitioner acknowledges that prosecution is permitted after impeachment and conviction, which refutes many of the other arguments in his brief. And text, structure, and history contradict petitioner's assertion that the Impeachment Judgment Clause implicitly makes Senate conviction a condition precedent to prosecution. Impeachment is an inherently political process not intended to provide accountability under the ordinary course of the law. Criminal prosecution, in contrast, is based on facts and law and is rigorously adjudicated in court. Adopting petitioner's position would thwart the ordinary application of criminal law simply because Congress, in administering the political process of impeachment, did not see fit to impeach or convict. F. Likewise, neither Marbury v. Madison, 1803, nor petitioner's other remaining arguments support his claim. Marbury did not hold that a president's official acts can never be examined in a court, and a host of cases from the founding to the present refute that claim. The cases on which petitioner relies stand for the distinct and narrower proposition that courts will not enjoin a sitting president. That principle has no application to criminal prosecution of a former president. The absence of any prosecutions of former presidents until this case does not reflect the understanding that presidents are immune from criminal liability. It instead underscores the unprecedented nature of petitioner's alleged conduct. And none of the dissimilar historical examples on which petitioner relies suggests otherwise. Petitioner's reliance on common law immunity principles fares no better. The established rule for judges and prosecutors that they may claim civil immunity for official acts but lack any corresponding criminal immunity applies equally to former presidents. By contrast, neither constitutional text nor historical practice supports applying anything akin to legislative immunity to presidents. 2. Even if this court holds that a former president is entitled to some immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts, that principle does not preclude trial on this indictment. First, the specific form of criminal conduct charged here, efforts to subvert an election in violation of the Term of Office Clause of Article 2 and the constitutional process for electing the president, does not justify any form of immunity. Second, the private conduct that the indictment alleges is sufficient to support the charges. Thus, even if liability could not be premised on official acts, the case should be remanded for trial, with the district court to make evidentiary and instructional rulings in accordance with this court's decision. Petitioner could seek appellate review of those rulings, if necessary, following final judgment. Argument. This case implicates two principles of paramount importance: the necessity of the effective functioning of the presidency and the equally compelling necessity of upholding the rule of law. Petitioner is charged with crimes that, if proved at trial, reflect an unprecedented assault on the structure of our government. The effective functioning of the presidency does not require that a former president be immune from accountability for these alleged violations of federal criminal law. To the contrary, a bedrock principle of our constitutional order is that no person is above the law, including the president. Nothing in constitutional text, history, precedent, or policy considerations supports the absolute immunity that petitioner seeks. 1. A former president lacks immunity from federal criminal prosecution for official acts during his presidency. As the Department of Justice has long recognized, the separation of powers precludes the criminal prosecution of a sitting president. Such a prosecution, whether for personal or official misconduct, would impermissibly interfere with the proper functioning of the executive branch. But the same concerns do not apply to prosecution of a former president. Rather, a former president is subject to federal criminal prosecution for personal and official acts that violate valid criminal laws. The president, of course, occupies a unique position in the constitutional scheme. The Constitution vests the executive power in the president and entrusts him with supervisory and policy duties of utmost discretion and sensitivity, including matters of national security and foreign affairs. The president is the only person who alone composes a branch of government. The presidency, however, exists within a framework of separated powers in which Congress makes laws, the president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed, and the Article III courts exercise the judicial power to say what the law is, a power that generally includes the authority to determine whether a president's official actions are within the law. If petitioner were correct that the former president has permanent immunity from federal criminal prosecution except after his impeachment and Senate conviction, which has never happened, it would upset the separation of powers and usher in a regime that would have been anathema to the framers. The framers had experienced firsthand the dangers of a monarch who was above the law, and they adopted a system of checks and balances to avoid those dangers. They designed a constitution that would ensure an effective and energetic president under Article II, but one who was accountable to justice under laws passed by Congress under Article I, enforced by the executive branch under Article 2 and adjudicated by the courts under Article 3. That careful design leaves no room for an implicit and previously unrecognized rule categorically immunizing the president from accountability for criminal conduct involving the misuse of his office. A claim of absolute criminal immunity for a former president's official acts violates established separation of powers principles. 1. Petitioner asks this court to create a doctrine of absolute criminal immunity under which duly enacted federal criminal statutes cannot be enforced against a former president based on conduct involving official acts, unless he has been impeached and convicted by the Senate for the same conduct. Petitioner therefore asserts a new presidential power to be free of congressional commands in criminal statutes in virtually all circumstances. This court analyzes claims of presidential power under the tripartite framework set out in Justice Jackson's concurrence in Youngstown Sheet and Tube Company v. Sawyer, 1952. Under that framework, the president's power is at its height when he acts pursuant to an express or implied authorization of Congress. Where Congress has not expressly legislated on a matter, a zone of twilight exists in which the president and Congress may have concurrent authority, and where the president takes measures incompatible with the express or implied will of Congress, his power is at its lowest ebb. In that third category, the president can prevail only when he asserts an Article II power so conclusive and preclusive as to disable the Congress from acting upon the subject. That principle flows from the Constitution itself. Article 2, Section 3 requires the president to faithfully execute valid laws made by Congress under its Article 1 authority. Congress, of course, may act beyond its constitutional authority, and an act of Congress may trench on an Article II power that Congress may not qualify. This court has held, for example, that Congress may not constrain the president's power to recognize foreign countries, to grant pardons, or to remove at will a principal officer who leads an executive agency headed by a single director. More generally, the court has recognized that a statute may not validly prevent the executive branch from accomplishing its constitutionally assigned functions. But in other cases, the court has rejected a claim of presidential power when it contravenes Congress's express enactments and so falls within Youngstown's third category. 2. In claiming here that the Constitution prevents all federal criminal statutes from applying to a president's official acts, petitioner does not purport to identify any exclusive and preclusive power that would justify such an exemption. Nor could he. The framers did not provide any explicit textual source of immunity to the president. The text of the Constitution explicitly addresses the privileges of some federal officials, but it does not afford the president absolute immunity. And while the absence of constitutional text does not foreclose petitioner's immunity claim, the Constitution's structure presupposes a government under law, not an absolute shield that places the president above the criminal law unless he is first impeached and convicted. Recognition of petitioner's immunity claim would prevent Congress from applying the criminal laws equally to all persons, including the president. His immunity claim thus contradicts bedrock principles by placing the president above the law. Petitioner's allusion to alternative remedies for official misconduct does not avoid the necessary result of his argument: a constitutional exemption for the president from the criminal laws that govern everyone else. The criminal prohibitions at issue here illustrate that point. They proscribe a conspiracy to defraud the United States by defeating its lawful functions. Substantive and conspiratorial efforts to obstruct official proceedings, and a conspiracy to injure or oppress the free exercise or enjoyment of any citizen's constitutional rights. Petitioner has not argued, and could not plausibly argue, that the Constitution vests the President with authority to perform the conduct prohibited by those statutes, or that the President would be unable to fulfill his constitutionally assigned role if he were prosecuted for such inherently culpable conduct. Yet petitioner's immunity claim would not only exempt the President from those statutes, it would free him from federal criminal accountability for any and every crime committed through official acts, absent impeachment and conviction. Article 2 does not require that result, and it is therefore foreclosed by the fundamental separation of powers principle that the President is bound by valid statutes unless the Constitution exempts him. B. History supports the conclusion that former presidents are subject to prosecution for official acts. History also forecloses petitioner's claim that the Constitution grants a former president absolute immunity from criminal prosecution. Since the founding, every president has known that he could be impeached and separately subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. Even under petitioner's view, presidents have faced the prospect of impeachment followed by prosecution throughout our nation's history, and it has never been thought to deter a president's bold and unhesitating action. 1. The framers' most relevant writings provide no support for immunity of the type that petitioner claims. James Wilson, a signer of the Constitution and future justice of this court, explained to his fellow Pennsylvanians that far from being above the laws, the president is amenable to them in his private character as a citizen and in his public character by impeachment. Wilson therefore recognized that prosecution was the means of holding a president accountable in his private character for criminal acts, while impeachment was the means of addressing his public character as office holder. James Iredell, another future justice, observed in the North Carolina Ratifying Convention that if the president commits any crime, he is punishable by the laws of his country. Alexander Hamilton likewise confirmed that a president, unlike a king, would be liable to prosecution and punishment in the ordinary course of law. 2. The events of Watergate similarly reflect a broad understanding that a former president may be prosecuted for official acts. During Watergate, President Nixon was an unindicted co-conspirator in a prosecution charging White House officials with conspiracy to defraud the United States and to obstruct justice. Those charges were proved by evidence of a range of acts taken to achieve an unlawful objective, including the abuse of presidential power as a means of carrying out the conspiracy. President Nixon resigned after release of the tape revealing his misuse of the CIA, yet no one suggested that he was immune from federal prosecution once no longer in office. To the contrary, President Ford's pardon of former President Nixon and his acceptance rested on the understanding that the former president faced potential criminal liability. Both men were aware of and relied on this court's statement in Burdick v. United States, 1915, that the acceptance of a pardon represents a confession of guilt. During the Watergate era, DOJ rejected as unreasonable the claim that an offending federal officer acquires a lifetime immunity against indictment unless the Congress takes time to impeach him. And former President Nixon, despite his capacious view of presidential privileges, acknowledged that a president may be indicted after he leaves office at the end of his term or after being convicted by the Senate in an impeachment proceeding. 3. Subsequent investigations by independent and special counsels have taken as a given that a former president can be prosecuted for official acts. For instance, the independent counsel investigating the Iran-Contra affair recognized that a past president can be subject to prosecution in appropriate cases and so reviewed the conduct of President Reagan in the Iran-Contra matter against the applicable statutes, ultimately concluding that President Reagan's conduct fell well short of criminality, which could be successfully prosecuted. But no president before or since suggested that the prospect of criminal exposure had a chilling effect. And not until petitioners' briefs in this case has a former president suggested that the Constitution affords him criminal immunity. Reflecting the same presupposition that a former president may face prosecution, arguments for a sitting president's temporary immunity from criminal prosecution typically include or advocate offsetting rules, such as tolling or extending the statute of limitations, to ensure that temporary immunity does not place a president above the law. Absent from these writings is any claim that former presidents have absolute, lifelong immunity from prosecution. The absence of any such absolute immunity claim throughout our history weighs heavily against its novel recognition now. We've come to the end of this segment of this 50-page brief. But don't worry, next episode we will pick up exactly where this episode left off. Until then, thanks for listening to What SCOTUS Wrote Us.